A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chasers, it's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are back for a second podcast of the week. The other one is already in your feed, so hit subscribe, go and listen. That was our Premiership review. This is a European preview with a massive weekend of European action ahead. And as well as that, JB was talking at the end of the last podcast about wanting to bring up another little talking point, which we'll get into in a bit.
Laters.
How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
Some nice Disbury Toc 8 stash, that.
Oh, well, this whole thing, I just threw it on. Little Disbury Toc 8 with the Toc 8 proudly across the chest. Toc 8, if you don't know, stands for Talbot House, which used to be where the troops in World War One got their respite.
Toc 8, Talbot House.
Yeah, Toc 8 was the old phonetic alphabet. So instead of saying over the radios in World War One, Tango Hotel, which would be how you'd say it now, you'd say Toc H. So Talbot House was the association. The troops needed a little bit of care after, I don't know, being shelled by Jerry. So they said, get yourself over to Toc H, which is Talbot House.
That's very cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And we like that.
And there used to be Toc H's everywhere. And there still are. So if you go walk in the Lake District, you'll see a Toc H, a Talbot House, and you can stay there because that's what they are. They're kind of boarding houses. And every city had a Toc H, and probably still does, and every city, or most of them, had a rugby club. And we are the last remaining rugby club, which is why we are the greatest rugby club in Manchester, and probably Greater Manchester.
Mm. I want to set a little challenge then. Are there any other teams, maybe your local club, as you're listening, that have an interesting story behind their name? Mm. I genuinely, like Grasshoppers. How did Preston Grasshoppers become Preston Grasshoppers?
I don't know about Hoppers, but I do love the story about, is it Hartlepool with the monkey?
So that's the town of Hartlepool rather than any of the teams, isn't it?
Yeah, no,
the logo of the football team is a monkey.
Monkey hanger.
Is a monkey hangers.
As is the rugby club.
Yeah, but that's just a generic nickname for people from Hartlepool.
Oh, okay, I didn't realise that.
So something I went to do with, there was... I'm going to tread very carefully on this story.
They didn't know what a Frenchman was.
Yes.
So when a ship came into port with a chimpanzee on it, they thought it was a Frenchman. A common mistake. So they hung it. They hung the Frenchman. It was an act of extreme patriotic endeavour.
But there you go. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, or you can email us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Stories behind rugby club names or anything rugby related with an interesting story, because I've learned something already on this podcast. There you go.
Wonderful stuff.
How you doing, Phil?
Very good. Very good, thank you, Tim.
I wish I'd got the memo about wearing vests.
Singlets.
Today. Singlets.
I don't think we need to wish. And this is a standard issue, is it not? Why don't you do it for the next BT Sport pitch side pause? we only see your wrist anyway.
Well, do you know what? Just on that, and I'm not criticising it at all, but the it's getting more and more casual.
Yeah. It is getting casual. I've noticed
it?
This.
It is getting more and more casual.
And I'm sticking to the letter of the prescribed clothing direction that I got when I started a few years ago.
And I wonder if it's got something to do with lockdown and there being no fans and there's no sense of events, is there? So everyone can show up in their scruffs. Not scruffs.
They're all scruffy. Very smartly dressed
trainers.
Guys.
I mean, some people can wear trainers. Craig Doyle could probably wear trainers. Probably Austin Healey can wear trainers. The others can't wear trainers.
Ugo can wear trainers.
That is true. But you kind of got to dress appropriately. That's what I'd say.
I always go blazer of some description.
As well you should. I've had a conundrum which I've been mulling around my head for a few days now, which is, what is appropriate dress for a director of rugby? You're on the board. I get coach, what about director of rugby?
Yeah, well, like Di Young, for example, at Wasps, he always used to be away from home, T-shirt, at home,
shirt and tie.
I think he's got that the wrong way round.
Yeah, maybe.
You always wear your ties for away days.
But the away days, directors of rugby don't go to the hospitality box and mix with the other. That's what the CEO or the owner will do, or the chairman or whatever.
Head coach.
But these days, you play the game and then you're on the bus with the pizzas driving back straight away after the game.
Yeah, that is a show. Well, yeah, they are often. I see a lot of the lads at Sale come in and have a little bit of food.
Yeah.
In eyeshot of the fans. And then they're back on getting Dominoes and drinking beers. And, well, I don't know what they do. Do they drink beers still?
Yeah.
They do have lots and lots of Domino's deliveries though to the change rooms. Not sale ads, but the way
pizzas is standard.
It is, isn't it?
You've got to refuel.
So it's expensive.
It's recovery.
Yeah.
As long as one of them's got a wife or family member who works in the NHS and you get your 50% discount.
Yeah.
Is that still going?
It's always been the case.
You've got to think about
what?
This, right? The reason the pizza model, in my mind, is broken is because a pizza, by its very definition, doesn't cost much to produce. It's like a bit of bread with some cheese, and yet they're charging how much for it?
A standard, if you've not got any discounts, which never order Domino's without discounts.
Never.
But standard would be about £16 for a large pizza with a few toppings on it. It's ridiculous.
You can get a lovely steak for that.
Super League did a deal with Papa John's to sponsor the Super League, right? Well, kind of sponsor the Super League. Do you know how much they paid to sponsor the Super League?
Did Super League pay them?
Zero. They just provide Super League players with pizzas.
What? That can't be true.
I don't know.
Can we get some verification on that? I don't believe that. Wow.
There was also no wonder
Luther Burrell wanted to get the hell out of Dodge.
Free pizza?
He's not going to keep that shred with Papa John's, is he?
I'm not being funny. If you think the marquee player regime is expensive, try ordering pizzas for all your players every week.
Yeah,
that's expensive.
When they're on 6,000 calories a day because they're having 40 contacts a game, 40 tackles, 40 calories a game.
If Leicester just cut out the pizza bills, they probably could have kept Manu Tuilagi.
Right, we'll get on to the European Cup and European Challenge Cup quarterfinals in just a second, but a very brief word on the other Premiership game we saw this evening. Quins with a handy win away at Gloucester, and it was a very Gloucester performance. They had erratic moments. They threatened to be good and then kind of bodged up. But actually, I'd rather focus on the positive. And Quins, that was a steely Quins performance.
It was. They played the right game plan, which they didn't actually play very much rugby at all. There was a stat halfway through the second half, which was, Gloucester had 46 phases in the Quins 22, and Quins had had one phase in the Gloucester 22.
Wow!
And it was at that point 28-10. But Quins, they played an intelligent kicking game. Both the halfbacks, all three of the halfbacks, because when Scott Steele came on, he continued the box kicking. Marcus Smith kicked well, and they had a reasonably aggressive defence. Not mega aggressive, but aggressive enough to put enough pressure on Sippers, Atkinson and the back three that they forced errors, and they forced three schoolboy interceptions, the kick and the two passes, that led directly to the three Quins tries.
Yeah, you don't need phases in the opposition 22 if Sippers will just kick you the ball.
Yeah, or pass you the ball.
I watched the first half of this, and at the end of the first half I thought, this is dross. I won't be watching the second half, and I didn't. But in that first half, the first three Quins kicks, the first 9 points Quins got, were basically free. That kick from Sippers, I do not know what happened. I mean, he just belts it into the arms of somebody.
Don Brunt.
Is it Don? No, didn't Don Brunt receive the pass?
Yeah, I think you're right.
But Don Brunt receives the pass.
Whoever it was. It was, sorry.
Gets it to Murley. Murley goes in, and it looks like an amateur score. It really, like, the way no one's around him just looks like... it is a gift. And then you've got to remember, Sippers throws the ball forward. Thorley drops it. Thorley puts the ball through his legs. These are very, very unusual mistakes for players of this calibre. Yet they're making them. And I kind of thought at that point, there's no way they're going to win this if they continue to play so poorly.
And they didn't. They got well beaten. The most concerning part of the whole programme on BT Sport for me was the chat with Martin St. Quintin. The Gloucester
owner.
Owner who was saying that if rugby without crowds goes on into next season, he thinks there's a real possibility that there's several clubs that won't be able to continue to run.
They already can't continue to run, so never forget that. As things stand, these clubs cannot run. The only reason they do run is because owners fund them. So what Martin St. Quintin, what's his name?
Martin St. Quintin, I think.
Yeah, do you know what? I want to always say Hazel. The reason I want to say Hazel is because there's a company in North Wales called St. Quintin Hazels, or Quintin Hazels, but no, Martin St. Quintin. What he's actually saying is, not that, you know, these clubs are going to be going under or they're bankrupt, because effectively they already are. What he is saying is
they're not going
to no longer willing to fund it. And that's a very big...
Or can no longer fund it, because he's got totally separate, unrelated businesses that have similar issues, revenue-based issues.
And, I mean, oh God, no, some people will be really upset with me saying this, so I'm not... I'll just say it. The data seems to point to the fact if you socially distance and you're outside,
you're fine.
There's pretty much negligible risk. Look, so I'm very concerned, not just about rugby, but about all kinds of...
Talk H are playing a touch tournament in a few weeks' time. The touch tournament is going to be against other clubs around the area. And I don't know if it's going to be 15 aside, 7 aside, 10 aside, I don't know. But the ridiculous thing is, we can do lineouts, but we can't do competitive lineouts. We can play a touch tournament at Broughton Park, but we can't play an actual game of rugby. This is nonsense. This is utter nonsense, and it is destroying rugby institutions, rugby sports, all sorts of things. So I'm with you. I mean, if someone gave me the opportunity to join a crowd of 80,000 to go to Twickenham, I would do it. I would do it. Now, I'm not saying that's for everyone, but I would do it, and I should be allowed to make that choice. Simple. Phil, you see somewhere in between?
Well, you're both making the same point.
Saying I want 80,000 people to get up. But I'm saying you could have a quarter or third filled stadium safely and the risk is negligible.
I totally agree with that.
As long as they fill up corporate, I mean, that's the main thing, isn't it?
That's a huge element of it.
Get that money in. Because, you know, a lot of money is spent there. Particularly, you know, in Exeter and... Wasps has got a great corporate, Sale's got a great corporate. That's where they make a lot of money.
Yeah, the corporate is for all sports.
And I can't help but think that would be massive. Class to come back.
Well, I don't know. It depends how it's set up. As in, so if you go to... I've only done a few rugby corporate dues, but I've done quite a few football ones. And you either have them in big dining halls where you've got... 80 tables, each with 10 people on, so 800 plus people, or you have independent boxes where you have, I don't know, about 10 people per box.
Yep.
And the 10 people per box is surely manageable, because you're directly limiting the contact to a very small number of people.
That's a great point.
Compared to 800 to 1,000 people all indoors in a relatively small space.
I think we'll have to grin and bear it, because there's too many reputations on the line to backtrack on this now. But, yeah, it is what it is. Yeah. I would like to see changes. I mean, most importantly, I want to see changes to the community game. And a strategy which at least makes sense. The line-up thing is ridiculous. The touch rugby versus rugby thing is ridiculous. It's all ridiculous. In Ireland, they're playing again. But, I mean, you've got to go already changed, and you can't go in the change rooms afterwards. But they're playing again.
No baths.
No baths, what's all that about?
What?
Do you know, I was once called on to the BBC to talk about rugby and the hygiene in rugby and about sharing baths, because Public Health England, thank God that they're gone, made some statement that rugby clubs were unhygienic and we were sharing razors. Like, we've never been sharing razors. That's a nonsense.
I've just thought of something.
What?
There might be bad news about this whole thing.
More bad news, please.
More bad news. So do you remember when we went to our lovely, incredible trip to Romania?
Yes.
Our first live show.
Yes.
And we spent, well, a couple of great days on the beers.
Yes.
But we spent an afternoon on the beers and the Prosecco and the Aperol Spritz and everything else, swimming around the Thermae Spa.
Oh, no, you're not going to tell me what I think you're going to tell me, are you?
So one of those was set to be built in Manchester.
Oh, no.
Somewhere near the Trafford Centre.
Yes, so this is true.
Only a couple of miles from where we're currently sitting right now. Surely that's not going to get the go-ahead now.
I mean,
it's like a constant 38-degree temperature in there with hundreds, if not thousands, of people all sharing the same water.
Like I say, I'm willing to risk it. And if you don't want to risk it, that's up to you.
Just by the way, on the sharing razors, like, can I just go back a second? What business is it of Public Health England what independent adults choose to do with their razors or not? Isn't that their business?
Quite right. Yeah. I was called up. I had to go to BBC Five Live, sit in the studio and talk about
patronising adults.
Yeah. Do you share towels? Do you, we whip each other occasionally. What do you want me to say?
This one's got the towel.
We share
maybe
ports.
We'll share. Yes, port.
We share a lot of port.
Crikey. Anyway, European Cup. We've got the European Cup, we've got the Challenge Cup quarterfinal weekend. And so let's get into it. Let's do the big showpiece event first. And should we do it in chronological order through the weekend? I know that the games actually start on Friday night with Ashton Gate.
Yes.
But in terms of the Champions Cup,
yeah.
Let's go through it. What's the first game of the weekend?
First game is 3 o'clock on the Saturday, which is maybe it's the biggest derby or biggest confrontation, most history behind it. It is Leinster versus Saracens.
Yeah. You know when you're a big deal when your derby is from a different country.
Yes. The champions of one country. Yeah. The historic, for the last 5 years, champions of England.
And I do think this is probably the keenest rivalry. Probably in Northern Hemisphere rugby. Maybe there's a couple of local ones. Maybe Leinster, Munster. Maybe Exeter, Saracens. Maybe. But I think...
Maybe some of the French, like the Clermont-Toulon for the last 10 years has been a massive rivalry.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the ferocity, these games will match anything that the domestic leagues will throw at it.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before, but when we were in Monaco chatting to the devilishly handsome Rob Carney,
yeah,
and we were talking about Ireland on a near unbeaten season that year when Ireland got Team of the Year, Johnny Sexton got Player of the Year, and I was asking him what was his favourite win, and he didn't reference an Ireland game. He referenced a Leinster game against Saracens
That's a great memory, Phil. I was just looking into his dreamy eyes, not taking any of it in.
There's a lot I don't remember from that weekend, but I do remember that because it was really striking that Ireland, Carney and Sexton and all the rest of them, and Ireland have had such an incredible year, but he, ahead of everything else, ranked beating Saracens.
Wow.
Which was, it just shows, and that's a couple of years ago, and there's even a bit more...
Oh, they've lost the final to them since then.
Yeah, more water under the bridge since then, which is... So this is a seriously spicy game.
Who was the last team to win the Heineken Cup, which wasn't Saracens or Leinster? Toulon?
Probably. Yeah.
Probably Toulon again. Was it the play Saracens?
Maybe it was Toulon three times.
Yeah, Toulon won it a handful of times. I seem to remember them kicking that Gitto try. Must have been against Saracens. I'm sure it was. Johnny Morgan might have been playing the last time.
Well, and if you take out, because you've got three from Toulon, two or three from Saracens,
Saracens won it three times.
Saracens three, and then Leinster have won it once recently, but then... Before the Toulon dominance, Leinster won in 2012.
That's right.
I want to say, because they beat Northampton.
Yeah.
So when was the last winner not of one of those teams?
Well, Phil, you're the one with these answers. You've got a laptop.
Hold on. Not what one...
So it goes...
Munster?
It goes... looking backwards, so last year was Saracens, the year before that was Leinster, then there was two Saracens, then three Toulons, then 2012 and 2011 were both Leinster. They beat Ulster in 2012 and Northampton.
That's right, I remember
in
that now.
2011. So you have to go back to.
So Leinster was seven. When Leinster beat Ulster, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Crikey.
8 years ago now, that was 2012, that was. And then. So in 2010 was the last time that one of those three teams didn't win it.
And that would be Toulouse.
Toulouse, correct.
Wow.
Just after Leinster won their first one against Leicester
Tigers.
Do
you know why I remember that? It was Toulouse, and I think they're playing Biarritz. And Guy Nouveau, Guy Nouveau?
Guy Nouveau. sounds like a lead singer of. Yeah.
sounds like a perfume maker. Guy Nouveau, or whatever his name is, he got arrested because they didn't believe that. Going back to looking smart for rugby, he didn't look smart enough to coach the team, so he got arrested for being on the pitch and then later released.
Wow. Now, Mark McCall, I did ask him after the game on Sunday. Wigglesworth, Makavunipola, they've only played once since the restart. They both got injured in the game against Bristol, the first game back.
Mm.
They are both fit and available.
Wonderful news. Crucial. Wonderful news.
Yeah.
Yes.
Particularly Wigglesworth, actually.
Yeah. And I think Leinster would be favourites anyway, whatever Saracens team was put out, because they're at home and they're as good as they are. But you take out Ben Earl, Max Malins, Nick Tompkins, Alex Lazowski,
George Cruz,
yeah,
Liam Williams,
and that's half a dozen.
I believe that they can do it.
Stars.
I really believe they can do it, even without Owen Farrell. I think they can do it. I don't think they will, but I think they can.
I think they can, but in my head, it's like 85%. Leinster win, 15% Saracens win.
It's gutting.
Possible, but it's Leinster are just, they're so good.
They are so good. I honestly don't think there's a better second row combination on the planet than when Cruis and Itoje are clicking together. I just think they are magnificent. So for him to have to leave, I mean, did he have to leave? They weren't going to get in underneath the salary cap anyway. They may as well have kept him for this 1 year.
Just see out the year.
Keep everyone. Screw you guys. let's win Europe and then we'll get in, and we'll worry about everything later.
Find us another £5 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
but as we were discussed on the last podcast, in key positions, Leinster are fresh. But Saracens are fresh. Their team won't have played in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They've had their 15 picked for a long time.
Yeah.
And everyone in the squad has known what the team was. For a long time. Their whole season has revolved around this 80 minutes.
Yeah, this is the only one that counts from the restart. If they lose this, that's it. Season done. This team gets totally disbanded.
So I've not rooted for a team this hard for a long, long time. I really hope that they do it.
The Saracens do it.
I really hope they do it, yeah.
The bad boys.
They're going to have to do something different. I mean,
I would be box kicking it and chasing it hard, and that's all I'd be doing, really. Until I'm right within striking range, I'd be box kicking, chasing hard, trying to win penalties, kicking sticks. Mind you, their kicker's not even there. They've got to rely on a 19, 20 year old to kick sticks.
No, Alex Good.
Oh, I don't know. Does he?
Yeah.
I don't know. Vunipola can kick as well, can't he?
But he'll be on the bench. Alex Good will be starting 10.
Do you think?
I think it'll be.
I'm not sure.
I think it'll be Wigglesworth 9, Alex Good 10. Brad Barrett, 12. 13's a question mark. Probably Duncan Taylor, if he's fit.
Morris looks all right.
Yeah, but he played at the weekend.
Yeah, unless you slot Daly in at 13.
Oh, Daly at 13, yes. And then you'll have Lewington. Probably Maitland will end up fullback.
So I think they'll trust Vunipola. You were obviously involved, you were there on Saturday. Not that you will have seen anything.
It was just the fact that he started at the weekend that made me think he'll be not starting.
But these young lads, so they can do week after week after week. I mean, most players will do week after week, to be fair. So I think that's what I would do.
But box kicking. So one thing I would do is, and it is a gamble, I'd try and target Lama.
Yeah.
Because if you give him too much space, he's absolutely lethal. But under the high ball, put a bit of pressure the occasion on him. Now, that could be something that would totally backfire and Lama could just run riot.
That is a reason to have Maitland on the wing, because he is one of the best kick chasers.
Yeah,
and he's not.
Yeah, he's a tall boy as well. Certainly considerably taller than Lama.
100% what I do. And Wigglesworth is one of the best box kickers in the game. So there's that lovely area, isn't there, where you can get sort of like 3 seconds of hang time and draw. You want to be bringing Lama forward, so he's, you know, just slightly forward, and then competing there, and then knocking it back, and then do. And also, if you win a box kick, the next thing you should immediately do is box kick again. There's no winger behind.
Yeah, unless you win it in their 22. Box kick again. Win it in the 5 meter line, 5 meter from the try line. Box kick.
You know the rules.
The Hollywood movie script is going to be written potentially after this game, or it's just going to be in the bin.
Yeah,
well, something that could have happened.
Because there's two. There's the perfect season, or it's the redemption of the bad boys.
The perfect season story is not a. There's not been enough jeopardy, or
no, really.
There's been no jeopardy to this point in the winning the Pro 14.
I've even lost in.
I mean, the most boring film. Amazing team wins everything.
Yeah. Amazing.
That's not a great story.
And every day they turned up on time. Brilliant.
they're so good.
I tell you when it's going to make a difference. Second half, when they start bringing on a fresh, meaty front row, you know, they start rotating that enormously talented squad.
And this is like Andrew Porter just strutting on to come and boss the
they are a brilliant, brilliant team. Yeah. And I expect them to do Saracens.
I think they'll do them comfortably.
Towards second half.
I think that's when you'll see it.
Yeah,
the replacements and the fitness.
We saw that a bit with Ulster. That you just a 10 minute spell is all they need to put you away.
Yeah,
and end the game.
Yeah,
Saracens are going to have to get a lead. I mean, they can't keep it tight, can they? They're going to have to get a lead.
It is a little bit like if you think Ireland beating the All Blacks in Chicago. You have to.
Score
on that day, you have to score a certain number. You're going to have to score more than 30 points, and that means because you never got many chances against the All Blacks. Ireland on that day took every single chance they had. I think it's basically that Saracens have got to do something like that.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily chime in well with my idea of box kicking them to death. So,
although that is one of the ways that Ireland did the All Blacks in Chicago,
yeah, I guess so. Box kick away into territorial possession position. And then try and score.
Yeah, or suffocate.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that they can do. Who knows? I'm looking forward to this one.
It's
immeasurably.
Yeah. This is very, very exciting. Yeah. This feels like the first game, other than the final last week, that I'm kind of nervous about watching.
Yeah.
Like, excited and nervous for.
Mm.
Anyone not saying Leinster? Anyone going to be brave enough?
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be Leinster by a margin, maybe by 17. I'm going to go for. I know, which is harsh, but they're that good.
I don't think it'll be that much because Saracens just know how to stay in the game.
Yeah, but and they've got they've got big players like you say, Vincent Cock, World Cup winner, Jamie George, Maku Vunipola, Billy Vunipola, Maru Itoji.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
It's
fairly. Who's he at the second row they're going to pair him with?
I didn't mention Ezekwe in the list of players that are not there. I said, hold on. Yeah, who is the other second row?
So they've Hunter got Hill?
Hunter Hill or Kapoku. But didn't both of those play?
Both of those played at the weekend.
Yeah.
Michael Rhodes will be blind side. Jackson Ray will be open side.
Unless they put Rhodes into the row.
Yeah, who will the other lock be?
It will come to you when you think, oh yeah, I knew all along.
Of course they've got that mutant. Of course. How could we possibly forget? He was on track to be a Lion not 3 years ago.
Oh, Tim Swinson.
Tim Swinson.
Swinners.
Yes. Oh, that'd be awesome. Game over. Good night.
Well, Swinners does have experience in beating Leinster.
He does. He knows all about it. I'd play Swinners every day of the week.
Right, next game.
Okay, the next game is an all French affair. And it is Clermont at home at the Stade Marcel Michelin versus Racing 92.
I have no idea. Who's next?
Wow.
So, I mean, Clermont just got off the back of beating Toulouse in the first game of the top 14, which is no mean feat.
No.
I know that Toulouse, so I can't tell you the exact team, but I know Entermac and Colby were playing, so it's going to be a fairly handy Toulouse team with those two in. And Racing, they beat Lyon in a fairly close game with some.
Lyon aren't what they were, though.
With some silky skills from Finn Russell playing in that game.
Yeah, he did look good. The Stade Marcel Michelin without a crowd is. That makes me sad. Yeah. Because that the atmosphere at that place on a European game like this would be. I mean, it's incredible anyway, but it's a special place.
So, was it Clermont Quinn's?
Yeah, Clermont Quinn's semi final of the Challenge Cup. I worked there and it was. I did a piece with like Ben Kay back to the studio, like, yeah, we're here 20 minutes before kickoff, just set up the scene. And I couldn't hear myself. I couldn't hear anything Ben Kay said. I just asked him the question, waited until his mouth stopped moving, and then asked the next question. I couldn't have a conversation because I couldn't hear a word. It was unbelievable.
So ultimately, right, I'm going to say Racing only on brand and name value. Finn Russell, Curtly Beal, Vakatawa. They've got so many names, and they do play very nice rugby.
Clermont have got a few names.
Yeah, they have got a few names.
They've got the boy. Who's the boy? The legacy player, the legacy winger,
Damien Penaud, and Fofana.
They've got a better game breakers of their own,
and they've got one of the best back rows in the world in Percelli Jaarto if he's playing. They got one of your favourite players, JB, Arthur Itaria, as the second row back row.
And they've got a bunch of Georgians, haven't they, in the front row?
Obviously.
Every top 14 team has got a bunch of Georgians.
What else would you do?
So,
I mean, I don't know. And if I said I didn't know, I'm lying. I haven't got the faintest idea.
Well, don't forget, Clermont have earned the home match by virtue of being one of the top-seeded teams. So they're very handy. I'm going to go for Clermont. I'm just going to go for a home win. Sneaking it. I'm really excited about this one.
Racing, but I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, I'm boringly going to go for a home win as well, predictably. Albeit, it should be a good game, that, because both teams can play and like to play.
That could be electric.
And then, speaking of two teams which like to play, Sunday at 1:30, Toulouse, the might of Toulouse, host the might of Ulster.
It's a procession for those alt-proud pride Ulstermen.
It will be a procession. It'll be 50 points to nil to Ulster.
Yeah, I don't see anyone in the Toulouse team really who could really trouble Ulster, looking at this here. I don't think it bodes well for Ulster.
No. So Ulster, at the weekend, they had the amazing James Hume try after 4 minutes, and then they just spent the whole game banging their head against the wall and could not get anywhere. And I fear that they will have put too much into that game and have nothing left for this game.
Yeah.
I'm not predicting. I'm boringly predicting another home win, as much as I'd like to see Ulster do it.
Yeah, I think Jerome Kano is going to take the dinner money of every single one of your players.
Yeah.
And not give it back.
Well, he might give some of it to Cheslin Colby and some of it to Roman Entermac.
Yeah. DuPont
is so good.
DuPont and Entermac, one of the most exciting halfback pairings in world rugby. Colby and Uge
and
on the wings.
Ramos and Gitoun as well. He's rapid at 13.
Oh my goodness me.
I would be amazed. I would be utterly amazed if Ulster do anything. I think they'll play some nice rugby.
Jerome Kano played second row at the weekend.
Packing down alongside Rory Arnold.
I don't know. I don't know enough about Toulouse, but again, name value alone.
Sorry, Phil.
It doesn't look great.
It's going to be another disappointing week.
Yep, but that's how you like it, isn't it, in a way? Well, that's how Ulster fans like it.
Yeah, it would be disappointing if we won.
Yeah, in a way.
Big games.
Big time, in fact.
And then on to the final game. 5:30 on Sunday is Exeter hosting Northampton Saints.
Oh dear.
Exeter, who've rested everyone. Northampton, who played a pretty strong team, to lose to Leicester. I mean, what do Northampton do in this? Do they even bother?
Well, there is. Yeah, they'll go. This is all that they've got left. So they'll give it the best shot they have. But one of the stories that's come out this evening, just before we started the podcast, is that Northampton have said they have one fit loose head in their squad, a 19-year-old. I can't remember his name because I've never heard of him before. Emmanuel Iogun. And
where's he from?
He's an academy lad, I believe. And he's the only fit loose head at the club. The ECPR, whichever it is, the rules stipulate that you're not allowed to sign anyone else and put them onto your European squad. So Northampton will be going to Exeter with one player who can play loose head. He'll 19-year-old lad who will have to play 80 minutes or else it will go uncontested and Northampton will drop a player.
Not great, is it?
I mean, if the recent performances of both Exeter and Northampton suggested that this wasn't going to go well for Northampton, that is just another bit of information that... who'd be a Northampton fan at the moment?
How do they... I mean, I think Northampton, again, it's a bit mealy-mouthed to say this, but they can win. They have... I mean, they have a lot of quality. They don't have to just have a bit of quality. I think they might be missing Cobus Reinach more than they realise.
Potentially.
There's no doubt they're missing him. He's a game-breaker, and he's won several games just with a moment of magic that only he could do. So, yeah, I do get that. But the biggest issue for me when I look at Northampton is...
Front row.
It's set-piece. They're just...
Not at the races.
And psychologically, we've talked about this many times, psychologically, the impact of having a scrum under pressure, just it affects everything.
Yeah.
Because you're scared to knock on.
Yeah.
And they're a team that went to play on confidence, and when it feels effortless... when Northampton play really well, it looks effortless. But when in the back of your mind, shit, if I knock on, we're going to be penalty, back 50 metres, points down.
Yeah.
It's just that knock-on effect, isn't it, to the pack as well. They lack a bit of confidence, they won't be as abrasive as they normally are. I mean, they've got some cracking carriers. They've got some cracking back five forwards. I mean, even you would say, oh yeah, they've got the Franks and whatnot, but they haven't performed. They haven't performed nearly as well as they need.
That hasn't been a good signing. That haven't been good signings, have they?
And also in the backs, they've got dustings of absolute magic, but they need to put it all together. And I think it comes down to what you said, Tim. It's not going to happen if you don't have a set piece and particularly a scrum. Damn bigger can't win it all. Although maybe.
Well, there was a comment that said a team with Dan Bigger in it that has major injury issues going up against a team that play in white.
Perfect.
We've seen this before.
Yeah, we have.
We have. And it doesn't bode well for the team in white.
But, yeah, if anyone can do it, Dan Bigger can do it. I look at that back line.
Oh, no, maybe it's Europe. Exeter will be wearing lilac.
Oh, no.
Lilac
it's all over,
and orange
it's all over shades.
And black. I cannot see it. From all the games I've watched of both of these two, particularly since restart, there is no way on earth that I can see anything other than...
Because they just can't get parity up front. That's where they're going to struggle. They can't do anything up front. If they can't do anything up front, Rory Hutchinson can be as good as he likes.
Yeah, can be as many defenders as you want, but Luke Cowan-Dickie is going to score three pushover tries and they're just going to get beaten up front.
Cowan-Dickie is probably the epitome of where these two teams differ. He really is.
Yeah. And Cowan-Dickie, how many tap and go tries has he scored since lockdown?
And I've noticed more teams doing tap and go. Sale did it the other week.
It's a copycat league, as they say in the NFL. Yeah, one team does it. Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe they'll try and do that.
Someone will do the... come on, Exeter. When you get a penalty, do the old wall.
Oh,
the old wall move.
All they do is score once and everyone will do it.
Yeah. And then you can focus on your actual attacking rugby.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I think it says where Exeter are at that... Oh, by the way, I asked Rob Baxter and Stuart Hogg will be fit. He went off injured.
Good.
He went off injured last week.
It is important for Exeter... It's not actually going to be that important for this game.
No.
But it will be important when they see someone
next,
in the final.
Next week, when they play Toulouse.
Ulster.
Toulouse or Ulster.
Or Ulster. And by the way, Exeter will play at home in that game. We mentioned on the last pod, and I think we said it would be in France, but no, Exeter were the second seeded team behind
Leinster.
So they will get a home game.
If he starts. But if Gareth Steenson plays against Ulster... which seems unlikely on both counts that Gareth Steenson gets selected and they play Ulster. But if he does, he doesn't have a great record against Ulster.
No.
So maybe that's your route to the final.
Yes, we've just got to beat up. We've got to throw around the enormous pack that is Toulouse's pack.
But, and then you get to play Leinster.
Yeah. Leinster or Clermont or Racing.
Yeah, one thing that did really impress me is, or Saracens, one thing that did really... I say everything about where Exeter are at is that Rob Baxter has been quite openly for a long time now talking about this being a 2-week European block. He's like, well, you know, we're preparing for two games.
Yeah,
so they're talking like not that the game's won. They're going to know they're going to have to go out and win it, but they're talking like, yeah, we're already thinking about how we manage our resources so that we can play a semi-final.
Yeah, because they play this weekend, and then if you are lucky enough to get through to the semi-final, you play next weekend.
Mm.
But then there is a 3-week break while you finish. No, it's not even finish the domestic season. It's conclude most of the domestic season bar the final, and then have the final of the Heineken Cup.
Madness.
Yeah. I will just say one thing though. I'm working the Exeter game, which I'm looking forward to. I love going to Sandy Park, but 5:30 PM on a Sunday. At Exeter, that's a really inconvenient time to be having a rugby match.
Hang on a minute.
I was thinking, so we're going to have to podcast with me, I reckon, in the car park at Sandy Park after the game, in the car, and then do the podcast, and then I can get driving. So I'm not going to be back until very late.
You'll be back
late.
At like 4 in the morning.
Why? I don't understand that. Why?
Because the game will finish about... I'll be finished at 7, 8 o'clock.
Yeah. It'd be 8 p.m.
Sorry, to be clear, the time doesn't concern me. You have a driver. BT Sport pay for your driver. Why can't you talk whilst he drives?
Well, because the helicopter's too loud, JB.
It is loud, actually, that helicopter. It is loud, to be fair. Private jet again for you, Tim.
So, yeah, we'll have to pod straight after the game, if that's all right.
Yeah, we can manage that.
Cool, so that's the Champions Cup. So we are saying that we're going to have Exeter against Toulouse in one semi-final. No, Exeter against Clermont in one semi-final. I've just looked, Clermont lost at the weekend with pretty much their full-strength team out. They lost to Bayonne.
Hang on.
So I might,
was that not the week before?
Oh, it might have been the week before.
Yeah, you are correct.
I think I might change. I'm just looking at that and going, that was Clermont's team. I'm starting to think maybe without the crowd, I'm flipping and going for...
Hang on, so what was I looking at before? Top 14? 2021 top 14. I've got Clermont having played one against Toulouse.
Oh, right. Oh, maybe I'm looking... Maybe it's shown me... I did go to... For some reason, I went to the BBC, so, I mean, it could very well be wrong.
No, but then I'm on... Ultimate Rugby is saying what you're saying.
They did beat Toulouse on Sunday the 6th of September.
That's the week before. Right, OK.
Oh, fair play. No, they did. Yeah. Oh, and also, yeah, different team. Matsushima, that's one that has been playing for Clermont. Oh, no, that was Clermont's first team that played Toulouse.
Toulouse, yes.
So, oh yeah, 33-30. So if it's a replication... All right, I'll stick with what I said, Clermont. So we're saying it's going to be Exeter against Clermont in the semi-final.
Is it not the other way round? As in, I've got here... This might be wrong, but... Win of quarterfinal 3, which is Toulouse v Ulster, against win of quarterfinal 4, which is Chiefs versus Saints.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Toulouse. Oh, it's Toulouse or Ulster. Sorry, not Clermont.
Yeah, Toulouse or Ulster.
So it's going to be Toulouse versus Exeter. I think in Exeter, or is it in England? Might actually be in Exeter.
Yeah. Historically, it's a neutral venue in the country of the home team.
And we're going for Leinster versus Clermont in Dublin.
Yes. Yes, I think that. Albeit the neutral venue was... more for due to attendance rather than anything else, I think.
I think they might have changed it to home semi-final.
Yeah.
Because of the through seedings. But anyway.
Anyway.
Leinster will end up playing at their home ground or whatever happens, because
yes,
they always
one
do.
One of their two home grounds.
Yeah. So there we go. That's what we're thinking the semi-finals will do.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile.
From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit UH1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
That's for the Challenge Cup.
Yes.
And the weekend gets underway on BT Sport on Friday night. I'll be at Ashton Gate. I'm really looking forward to this one. And I thought the other day when Bristol, or yesterday even, God, the days are flying by. I thought yesterday when Bristol put out that team against Wasp that they'd really dropped a bollock a little bit with their selection. However, I chatted to a mate who's a Bristol fan.
I know what you're going to say, and I think you're wrong.
Who said, well, this is what he said. He said, I'm a Bristol fan. I was two when we last won something in 1983. I'm not alone in wanting a European Challenge Cup win and accept the baby steps if it means we don't get the playoffs because of midweek games killing us.
I wonder if we have the same friend, because I think this is nonsense. And not only that, I think resting your team to win a game against the Dragons in a semi-final of the second-tier European competition is mental. I really do. If you gave me a choice of going to the playoffs or saving your best team to play Leinster... Oh, no, sorry, it's the other good... Munster. No, it's not. No, it's another good team. Oh, no, it's the Dragons. The Dragons, right? I think I would want to go and get that playoff spot. The games are... When did they last play?
3 weeks ago. Or it will be 3 weeks by the weekend.
Hang on. So, the last time that Bristol played was Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay, so they do have a short turnaround.
Yeah, they've got a five-day turnaround.
Yeah, get that. But on the other hand, you needed to win that Wasps game, or you needed not to get pumped. Because if things go as we expect them to, I don't think Bristol are going to get into the playoffs. Well, they don't. It's a disaster.
My prediction was that they won't get into the playoffs, but I disagree. It's a disaster. I think they would have loved to get into the playoffs at the start of the year, but the way that everything has the season has been thrown into turmoil with the short turnarounds, I can understand, particularly as a Bristol fan, why if you've not won anything since 1983 and you remember that far back, that you would want to take
playoffs,
have your best opportunity.
Playoffs. That's what you need. You need to get, you know, winning the second tier of Europe. Who cares? And I know what you're saying, Phil. I know what your friend's saying to him. I don't buy it. And here's another thing for you. Bristol is saying baby steps. I'm also talking directly to a good friend of mine, and I'm sure he knows who he is. Baby steps, baby steps, baby steps, right?
I think it is the same person, by the way.
Right. If that's the case, fine. But they are playing year two with their year three squad. And we seem to have forgotten that. So if this finished the year with their year two squad, remember, we've had a break. They've reinforced with Kyle Sinclair, Rad Rada, Earl... Malins, there's no excuse. You've got to win it now.
They're playing short turnaround games with long turnaround squad.
And if they get through to the semi-final, let's not forget that they will have played Sunday, Friday, following weekend, and then Tuesday, I think.
So four games in less than two weeks,
12 days.
I think they'd be far better off getting into the Premiership playoffs than chasing this.
The unique chasing set the of dragon. Circumstances has exposed Bristol, and maybe Pat Lamb was right about his squad.
How useless all those players really were.
Yeah, yeah.
This has just shown the honesty of Pat Lamb.
Leicester are playing. Leicester are in Europe.
Leicester are in Europe. And
So are we saying Bristol are going to do a job? I mean,
yeah.
They'll put Dragons away. Probably they'll put them away so easily that they'll think we could have played
a few more of
Will
our good
Capon
players.
And
I like Will Capon.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Huge future.
Yeah, really good player
ahead of him.
Just on this, the Bristol Dragons is Bristol's second closest derby, isn't it? Geographically, yeah.
They used to have some right things.
Newport to Bristol,
Newport
was,
I remember when Newport was good and Andy Powell was playing for them. Just after Gary Teichman left. And they were quality, like absolute quality.
Rod Snow at prop.
Yeah, it's London Mortens. They had some Simon Rowell Louis. I mean, that's some absolutely amazing players. Who was the other one? He's CEO of South Africa, wasn't he? Moriarty? No, was it Moriarty? Andy Marinos. Andy Marinos, Howarth. Shane Howarth.
Yeah. Shane Howarth.
Christ, I'm naming a lot of lads that played at. Did a lot of those lads play at Sale? Howarth definitely played at Sale. Did
Gareth Cooper play at Dragons before he went to Bath?
Yes, he did. I'm just trying to think, did Slerna Mortens.
Oh, well, he might have been Swansea, actually. Oh, I can't remember.
Doesn't matter. I remember them when they
were. Was it
really
Andy Williams? I can't remember. One of them.
Oh, the scrum off. Andy Williams. Yeah, he was. I'm sure he was. Oh, maybe he was Swansea. I don't know. But I do know this. Newport, not Dragons. And Newport used to be very, very good. Hopefully they'll be good again one day. And actually, if you look at who they're signing, yes, a lot of them are slightly older, slightly past their best. Jamie Roberts and. Who's the other one that they signed? Hibbard, but they've got a lot of young talent there as well.
Yeah, and they've brought in some handy players, like Jonah Holmes has gone there, Moriarty's gone there.
Tompkins
is a good signing in anyone's book.
Randrandra on Tompkins is a good matchup.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe I'm being a bit unkind to Dragons. Maybe they'll come up with something. Oh, and Wainwright's meant to be very good.
Wainwright, he's not bad, is he?
No, he's not bad at all. Who knows? We will find out on Friday.
That back row battle, because Ben Earl could have played himself into a starting spot, maybe. But Nathan Hughes, Luatua, and then you've got Wainwright, Moriarty, and
Ollie Griffiths.
Yeah,
it feels like I've not seen Luatua play for several weeks now. Has he been injured?
No, he's been playing.
No, he's played.
On the bench.
Yeah,
he
played.
Now, he is their best signing. I know there's other lads, but he is actually their best signing.
He's so good because they get so many minutes out of him.
Yeah.
Do you know what hooker played at Newport Dragons?
Yes. There was the guy who captained Wales.
There's loads of hookers, but there's one in particular. There's a hooker.
I think I know who you're going to say. 2017 British and Irish Lion.
No. No, I'm going to say Steve Diamond.
What?
Yeah.
Steve Diamond played there.
Wow.
Seems to think there's quite a lot of players that go from Newport to Sale back in the day.
He played four. No, it can't. No, it's a different Steve Diamond.
There can't be more than
it's
one Steve Diamond.
It's a fly half called Steve Diamond.
Oh.
Fly half Steve Diamond. I looked at his playing record.
Pretty sure Steve Diamond.
It could have been him because he played a bit of rugby league as well.
Pretty sure Steve Diamond could have played fly half.
Yeah. For Dragons.
Steve Diamond, born 7th of July 1953, is an English-born rugby union and rugby league professional who played in the 70s and 80s for Newport as a fly half, for Wales.
And now is the
rugby league.
DOR of Sale Sharks.
And,
What a turnaround.
Here's what I found.
Oh, no! Not now, Siri, not now.
Right, next game. Bordeaux, Edinburgh.
Don't know.
Edinburgh will be desperate to win this because they really should have been in the Pro 14 final.
Yeah,
they believe they had a crack at, or should have had a crack at Leinster.
Iron Dew's mad.
I think Edinburgh are going to win this, knowing very little about Bordeaux other than. They were one of the top teams in the top 14 last season.
That could be anyone, couldn't it?
It could be anyone.
So mental.
And they did have one semi-red rather.
They've got Santiago Cordero, don't forget.
Ooh, yeah.
Don't forget they've got Vladim Kobolash
and Jefferson Poirot as their props.
Who is the best wrestler ever to walk through the gates of Carrington, which is quite something.
And the best table tennis player.
And the best table tennis player at Sale. So I'm pretty sure...
Bordeaux are going to win on the strength of that analysis alone.
They've got a flanker whose name is made for 2020. Wokey.
Oh, right. Intersectional misogynist.
So I'm going to go for Bordeaux at home.
No way. Give me Edinburgh. Then we've the time on that I've got in front of me is 9:15 on Saturday.
Lovely.
Which
evening kickoff.
Great. Yeah, a late evening kickoff.
Beautiful.
Toulon hosting Scarlets.
Oh, that's a good game.
That is a good game, isn't it? I don't know. Again, I don't know. Two teams I've not really seen much of.
Well, you've got Sergio. They put Leon to the sword at the weekend.
Yeah.
They've got Issa and...
Facundo Issa.
Facundo Issa and Parise as back rows. Olivon
is
in their back row as well. So they've got some good players.
I will be supporting Scarlets purely because... I like Glenn Delaney.
They've got big Alan Oisa. Isn't he that massive guy that was a...
I'm pretty sure they're all massive. I mean, I saw Toulon show up to sell Sharks once, and I recognise a lot of their players. And the ones I didn't recognise were the bigger lads.
But they've got Big Brian. Yeah, it's Big Brian from Glasgow.
Big Brian, yeah.
Oh, have they?
Big
he
Brian
is
from
enormous.
Glasgow. Yeah, he is enormous.
Do you know who else is enormous? Eben Etzebeth.
He's big.
He's
quite large.
Fairly big.
Baptiste Serran played a game at 10 for them in the league the other day.
Did he?
With Takalua at scrum half. Bryce Heem as well. Worcester fans will know him.
Yeah. And they've got Bellew and Carbonell as a couple of fly half options. Two very talented young fly half options.
Too long a winning.
Carbonell is a very, very cheeky fly half.
Well, let's say Toulon then.
So who plays who? So we're saying...
So that's Toulon Scots, and the final game is Leicester against Cast.
Ah, now I know something about these boys. Leicester Cast was actually played a few years ago in the Heineken Cup.
Yeah.
And it was one of Matt O'Connor's few good games. And I thought, hang on a minute, everything's going to come together nicely here. They were scoring freely, running around. It was fantastic to watch. I don't think we'll see the same thing again. I don't even know how Leicester approach it. What did Leicester do here?
The league is done. So it was mentioned in comms tonight, actually, that Leicester can actually qualify for the Heineken Cup by winning
the
Challenge Cup. Yeah. So
does it take the eighth place
it
away?
It takes the eighth spot. So Leicester could deny so Northampton or Quins or Gloucester. Well, you say someone who deserves it. Someone who deserves it more than Leicester. They could deny one of those, which it'd be great for them to win the cup. That might actually be the worst thing for their recovery. Their improvement in form would be playing in the Heineken Cup next season.
It can't be this hard to run a rugby club. I just can't believe when I look at Leicester, it can be that hard. They had it all. Whoever was in charge of Leicester, they had it all. And they trashed it. They absolutely trashed it. It's like if I borrowed your car and took it rallying. it's unbelievable malfeasance in rugby club management. And here we are in a quarter-final weekend of a European Cup. And I have no idea what they're going to do. Presumably, they'll play their first team and then carry on throwing league games until such time that the league finishes.
Presumably, they will play their first team, but they don't want to win this tournament. They actually really don't want to win this tournament.
I'd love them to win this tournament.
That would be a disaster for Leicester Tigers Rugby Club if they win this whole thing.
In terms of their long-term recovery, another trophy they'd love.
But it shouldn't be, should it? It shouldn't be. You've got a salary cap, the same salary cap as everyone else. It should never have got this. I want them to win it. So it just forces them to accept that you need to win now. Spend your salary cap wisely. You know, do your jobs properly. You can win now.
But more than just the salary cap, Leicester had the name and the history that meant it was easy.
It was
easy for them because they could attract players like George Ford and Johnny May.
George Ford wanted to go there.
Exactly.
George Ford wanted this.
George Ford is a smart man and he wanted to go to Leicester Tigers.
And I haven't been there before too.
Yeah.
Do you remember how excited we were when the season before... when we were going to get Ben Youngs, George Ford, Manu Tuilagi, I can't remember who the 12 was at the time.
Only Matt Timilla.
Matsumura, Johnny May, Talusa Vianu,
yes,
and anybody else on the other wing.
Whoever was on the other wing.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at that stage.
Just unbelievable, but they had no front row.
Yeah.
Well, they did. They had.
Yeah, they did.
90 odd cap. Dan Cole's playing in the. Dan Cole,
you know, they had
playing
a guy.
The
Tom Youngs. They had.
And Pelota now.
I think we can plot this back.
Mullapola
and Genge coming in and.
Well, we go back to Cockerell, don't we? It's all about Cockerell in a way when we plot this back. Because ultimately he was right, wasn't he, when he said, my most important player is.
Tight head prop.
My second most is.
My backup tight head
correct,
prop.
Correct. Right? And that was how they set up their stall. And if only they could have got Major and Cockerell to somehow work together better, they would never be in this mess.
Yeah.
But also the recruitment. And you've got to point some fingers.
The Matt O'Connor. Double dip on Matt O'Connor.
That was outstanding. Let's spend God knows how much on a headhunter to find all the best names in rugby. And who do they end up with? Matt O'Connor.
Well, no, it's because you've got to find the best names in world rugby, but they've got to be part of the Leicester history. Therefore, the list of best names is reduced to like four blokes.
Yeah. I mean, there was calls for Martin Johnson to come back, and I've heard this from really knowledgeable people. I'm like, oh, you absolutely sure? When's the last time Martin Johnson even saw a cone, you know, a training cone, or held a tackle bag, or whatever you know they need to do now? I can't see that being an option.
I've used this particular example a bunch of times. So a couple of them is one, they thought, yeah, we don't need Harry Thacker. And we'll keep very, very expensive Tom Youngs. A club man, a fantastic guy.
Oh, you've missed the boat there.
And Pelota now. And whoever else they had.
McGuigan, who then got binned off.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll keep all them. We don't need Harry Thacker or let him go. And we'll swap Johnny May for one of the guys that's integral to making sure people like Johnny May actually get the ball.
One of the worst rugby decisions ever made by any person ever in the history of the game was telling Ed Slater, it's okay, you can go. Ed Slater, you know, if he'd hung around Leicester, I could easily see Ed Slater becoming the next Stuart. What's his name?
Hooper.
Stuart Hooper. Like, you could, you know, he could rise through the ranks. He's doing a master's or a degree in sports directorship. You know, it's the kind of guy you want. And I've not always thought that Stuart Hooper was the smartest. But that's, you know, he is a good bloke. And as is Slater, that's exactly the guy you want in your team. That's exactly who you want. How do they not? I could have told you this from my basement. I am telling you this from my basement.
And they could have. I mean, Johnny May did some amazing things, but you're better off having Ed Slater making sure Jonah Holmes got plenty of ball.
Well, to be fair, I must add this in the interest of fairness. Johnny May was their top try scorer for every year he was there. He might have even been top try scorer in the league for every year that he was there. But he was phenomenally successful in scoring tries. The problem was Leicester Tigers weren't phenomenally successful. So if you throw out that stat. That Leicester Tigers, no, Johnny May individually was phenomenally successful. I have to tell you, he will always be phenomenally successful, but you don't want an organisation based around Johnny May winning things. You want to win actual things.
mainly because half of the season, the players they relied upon weren't there half the time.
Yeah. So, anyway. Good luck, Leicester.
Yeah.
Hope you do well.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the most tries in the Challenge Cup this year, and there's two players who have swapped clubs who could continue their scoring record.
Okay, let me guess
for new clubs.
I'll guess.
Radrada. He came from
Talusa Vianu.
No, because Stad are not in there.
Oh, they're not in there.
So
hold on.
Not Nick Tompkins.
He has been mentioned tonight.
Has he?
Yeah. Very recently.
Johnny May? No. No, he's not playing, is he? I don't know.
So he left Leicester to go to one of the other teams in the quarterfinals.
Bateman. Greg Bateman.
He's not in the try scoring charts, but you're on the right lines.
Who's the other one there? Bateman. Bateman, Noel Reid?
No.
Eastman's on the club.
hang on.
He'd already, I think he'd already left Leicester. He wasn't one of the...
Jonah Holmes.
Ah.
Yes.
That's right. He didn't leave because of money. Well, he did leave because of money, probably. But he was due to leave anyway, I think, for Wales.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah. Jonah Holmes. He's gone there to make the Wales dream come true, and then Lewis Rees Zammit happened. Who, by the way, made up about 15 metres on Joe Marchand just casually.
Yeah.
He's amazing, isn't he?
Marchand, you can see Marchand's well clear. And Marchand will not have been caught. And Marchand looks back, and Rees Zammit is just hunting him down. And he starts trying to zigzag, didn't he? But it's not good.
Not to be negative on Johnny May, because I'm not. He's amazing.
He is amazing.
He's not a wise signing for anyone, is he, really? Unless you need Johnny May.
Well, it comes back to the point that if you're going to lose him for 10 games for England...
What I'm getting at here is, why did Gloucester take him back? I mean, they must know this Rees Zammit boy is even faster. They know they've got Seabrook. They know they've got...
Woodward.
Yeah, Woodward, of course.
Thorley. Zammit.
Yeah, they are uncovering... they're uncovering wingers like Newcastle United used to uncover centre-forwards. They're just everywhere. And yet they bought Johnny May back. I wonder if there was a better landing spot for him. It just doesn't... The more I think about it, it just doesn't seem like a particularly wise allocation of funds, particularly when you... I'd have given Mostar all of Johnny May's money. All of it. And maybe some more.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, who wants to know about some licensing ideas?
Yeah. Well, bearing in mind we talked about Northampton having one available loose head prop for this weekend's games, unless something drastic happens or someone gets very fit suddenly on the physio table. JB wanted to talk about something. He mentioned it at the end of last pod. So go on, JB. Yeah, so the floor is yours.
I've been thinking of this, and I think it's just perverse that in a professional sport we can have someone like, is it Tom West? The Wasps.
Yes.
It is Tom West, isn't it? I've not got his name wrong.
The loose head. Who was told...
Yeah.
Or the ref was told he can play hooker, and he did not want to play hooker.
Yeah, and whatever happened there... So, let's just relive the Tom West moment. So, whatever happened there, it is ridiculous in a professional sport that is allowed to happen. So, number one, Tom West... Story one. Tom West is asked, can you play hooker... He scratches his head and says, what does the bench say? And they go, the bench says, you can do. Do you feel safe to do it? He scratches his head again and he goes,
I'll give it a go.
No. Okay, scenario two is, he's asked, he says yes. Launchbury taps him on the shoulder and says, Westy, not a chance, mate, because we're not going to lose someone for head injuries.
Yeah.
This is perverse. The following week, there was another set of uncontested scrums, which I can't remember. That was a Bath game. Bath Wasps was the uncontested scrums. There was another one.
Yeah, there was another one, but someone did lose a player, and I can't remember which game it was because I've watched so much rugby in the last few weeks.
Agreed. So this has happened twice, and now we've got Northampton with one loose head. So you might get a European final, semi-quarter, whatever it is, with uncontested scrums. Now, I do not believe, for the life of me, that there is that much difference in strength and physicality between one front row position to another. I know there is a difference. I know there's a difference in technique. So please don't tweet me to tell me that there's not a difference in technique. But I also don't believe that it's insurmountable, right, for those players to learn multiple positions. And furthermore, I don't think it's unreasonable to ask coaches and players to declare what they can and cannot do before the game. So my suggestion going forward to solve this front row issue is every front rower, okay, should have to have a primary position and a secondary position. It is just something you have to do to be a professional rugby player. And you have to declare this at the start of every game. And it's basically like a licensing system. And the only criteria is your head coach at the start of the game has to say, yes, we agree that this guy is good enough to play loose head and tight head, and we've signed it off and we have seen it in training. And if that's not true, that comes down to the club. And all they need to do is 5 minutes in training at the end of every scrum session or change around their formations. And you then get a number of things that happen. Number one, Wayne Barnes isn't left to decipher
who is telling the truth or who is not telling the truth regarding who can play and who can't play. We don't have that ridiculous situation with the prop in... Oh, sorry, that's a different scenario. Let's not go there. It's simple as that. He looks at a sheet of paper. He goes, West is registered as a hooker, as a secondary position. He can play or we can't play. And there'll be no gaming the system because he can play or he can't play. And if he declares that he's not fit to play, then he doesn't. The second thing is, players can spin it to their advantage. And they can say, look, I play two positions, pay me more. And the third thing would be is, you're a coach of a rugby team. This is what you do full time. If they can't play more than two positions, that's on you. Make sure all of your front row can play more than one position. It's not too much to ask.
So, broadly, I'm agreed with all of that. The only bit that I would say is not right is forcing players to play two positions.
Yeah, agreed.
And one very good example I'll give, which you've referred to in the past, is one of the best scrummaging loose heads in the world, Joe Marler, said, I can play tight head, got put across the tight head, and got absolutely destroyed playing tight head.
I'm not saying... Well, what I'm saying on that is that they should be signed off as competent.
Oh, yeah.
So he was not competent.
You said before they should be forced to play two positions.
They have to have another position. Yeah.
I would like it to be that situation, actually.
But then that then contradicts with another point you made, which is pay me more. Because if everyone has two positions... Everyone is still worth the same amount.
Well, I mean, you could be triple threat.
You could be a triple threat. Greg Bateman.
I will go as far as saying I think that the positions they can competently play in a game, if called upon to do, should be something which is declared.
I agree.
I don't think is unreasonable. And that may just be clubs can go... I don't know whether you... Whether you can change that week by week is the thing, because clubs have to provide a replacement in each of the front row positions. So the only times this happens is when there are more than two injuries. Mm. No, when there are two injuries in the same position.
Yes.
Which is very unusual anyway.
It does happen, but it doesn't happen a huge number of times.
It doesn't happen a huge number of times, but it isn't unreasonable to say, and whether it's at the start of a season or whether it's game by game, I don't know, but to actually state these are the positions that player is competent to play in.
And you could do it in a week, because all the licensing states is your coaches have to sign you off as competent. You've got a week to sort it out.
Probably what would happen is clubs would only sign them off as competent in their position, But then I'm just thinking of other situations. There might be players who are genuinely reasonably competent and they wouldn't want to lose a player, so they'll chuck them in.
Yeah.
Well, but if they haven't signed them off in that position, then they can't.
Yeah, if they come to a game and, you know, I think it's perfectly reasonable in the professional sport, if you show up to a game and you've only got one loose head, and the European competition is different, to be fair, because of the rules. But, like, you're a professional outfit. Go and teach. You've got a full time staff. You've got full time athletes. I presume you've got a scrimmage machine somewhere. You know, go and teach someone to be a loose head or a tight head this week.
Teach
me to drive a long
an offensive
lineman's play defensive.
Lineman's play defensive. Yeah. They'd probably say to you, it's two completely different things.
You can do it. It's just the time scales. Yeah. Like, I mean, if I had to drive an articulated lorry...
You could do it. I could do it.
In a few days, you know, if you had to fly an A380 and land it in Hong Kong Airport with a 40-mile-an-hour crosswind...
You'd get on the simulator, do it a few times, you'd be fine.
It took me 4 hours to master that. Easy. And I think it changes the culture, too. The culture at the moment is very much, we only play one position, I only do this, I only do that. If it's just 5 minutes at the end of every session...
The biggest thing is incentivising the players with... Like, if they know they're going to get an extra 10 or 20 grand in their paycheck that is by far the biggest incentive.
If I was a coach, I would only be signing players that are competent in two positions, because I could maybe use those rules to my advantage and only put two front rows on
Matt Stevens went on a Lions tour. He went to World Cups because he could. But that's the way to do it. It's the carrot, not the stick. It's not clubs you must. It's players, open your mind and realise how valuable you could be if you work at this.
Yeah, maybe not the must, but it certainly sorts out the Tom West situation where
poor old Tom West is left on an island with Wayne Barnes, and Wayne Barnes is guessing. He's guessing, can I do it, can I not do it? And then, like, you know, tapping the shoulder from Launchbury, no, West didn't do it. You know, it just gets rid of that, and that is a farce in professional sport.
Yeah, the uncertainty there was ridiculous.
Declare it, and they have to declare it pre-match. It has to be on a register, and there's no wiggling out of it at that point.
Yes.
I'll go along with that.
I'm with you.
Cool.
Solved that one.
Yeah, done.
Right, second pod of the week done. See, we look after you, and that's why you need to hit subscribe, why you need to tell your mates, and why you need to follow at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, at Jay Beardmore, I'm at Cocker, Phil's lurking, and enjoy the rugby this weekend. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.